This podcast is a member of the Place to Be Nation family. Visit us at placetobenation.com, the only place to be in your pop culture world.
Welcome back to PTBN's NBA Team Podcast. I am one of your co-hosts, Andrew Reich, and I am joined by my co-host, Adam Murray.
Glad to be here. These finals are so exciting, aren't they?
That was a really, cold open I gave you to try to get into the finals. Well, the finals, it was kind of hot and then cold, then yes, then no, in the words of the infamous Katy Perry. I hope everybody is enjoying the NBA finals between the Cleveland Cavaliers and the Golden State Warriors, the final two teams left standing in the NBA to try to determine the winner of the Larry O'Brien Trophy. Game one, a real bad situation, obviously, for Cleveland. They were already without Kevin Love. Kyrie Irving is out with a broken kneecap. It's really all on LeBron now to try to fend off the best team that has been put together in the NBA probably, what, in, last 6 years, 8 years, you know?
Yeah, that's the way it goes.
Yeah, it's the way it goes. They're going to be duking it out. Lord knows when it might finish. It might finish on Thursday for Game 4. It might go a little longer than that. Who knows? Maybe LeBron pulls something off. But we're not going to be talking about the top two teams left because they're still doing their homework on the court. The teams we're going to be talking about are going to be teams that are doing their homework already off of the court now that their seasons are finished. And this is our series, a continuance of our series called Gone Fishing, as most people know from the TNT and inside the NBA. Trend where they talk about teams that have been eliminated or no longer playing anymore. We already talked about teams that had missed the playoffs. On this edition of the NBA Team Podcast, we're going to be talking about teams that made the playoffs and are back home, licking their wounds, I guess if you could say. It's because the Eastern Conference was a lot weaker than the West. I think it would be safe to say let's just start with the weakest team first, and we'll go with the East. You like that?
Sounds good.
And there's only two that had losing records. We'll start with the one that had the worst of the losing records, and that was the New Jersey. Ooh, wow, I did it. The Brooklyn Nets. Do you even think about them as the New Jersey Nets anymore? Or is that already passed you by?
No, that's her. They're long in Brooklyn now.
Yeah, they're dead like Tony Soprano, right? Is Tony Soprano dead?
I'm so sick of that argument 10 years later. I mean, when the best part of an ending you could do is it looks like your cable box shut off. Mm-hmm. That's not the greatest ending of all time.
What about the finale of Batman where it looks like they just spliced a YouTube clip at the end?
Yeah, what did you think of that? He makes a Coke commercial or something?
It's implied that, Don goes to this, hippie retreat. He sort of finds kind of some sort of self-worth in his life after everything's fallen apart, as we go to the end of that season. And the Sterling Cooper Draper Price is finally bought out by McCann. And then he kind of finds this kind of this shining light, and he's doing his little yoga thing. And then you see him smirk while he's closing his eyes, and then it flashes. I don't know if you're old enough to remember it. I'm not, but I do know what it is. And that was the famous Coke commercial where they have all the young people singing on a hill, and they're singing, "I like to buy the world a Coke." And I guess it was implied that Don Draper, in this moment of clarity, created the Coke ad. And some people thought that it was a little cheap, no pun intended, because of the fact that there's just a lot of deep things about Mad Men I don't want to try to talk about right now because this is a basketball podcast. But, I don't know if you're a fan of Mad Men. Did you even watch the show?
No, never seen a second of it.
I loved it. It's very much at a slow pace. It's like Memphis Grizzlies slow. You got to stay with it. But if you stay with it, it definitely rewards you. And with Mad Men, I definitely felt that way. The finale, I liked, but I think people wanted something that would blow you away. And the show never really did that. And so I thought it was kind of fitting that the show ended kind of with like, oh, like I think Ben Moore said this on Twitter. The people that, you know, he works with at Marvel.com and he does Place to Be Nation, great guy. And he said the same thing. He said Matt Weiner, the creator, like wrote a really good episode. He didn't try to like blow you away like David Chase did with Sopranos, where he tried to create this really weird, nuanced type of ending that or ambiguous ending. I don't think the ending was as ambiguous for Mad Men, but it did raise a couple of question marks, and it did earn the ire of a couple of listeners and viewers. So, you know.
Well, of course, you can't make anyone happy, but everyone happy. But the only thing I'll give him credit for is it seems like he had the ending already written when he started. And, you know, there was an interview with, I forget who it was, but he said, yeah, he told me 3 years ago, this is what I want the ending to be.
Mm-hmm. So yeah, you're right. You're right about that. He had in mind the last image of the show for like 3 or 4 years. So he had this in mind about the Coke ad for a long, long time and carried it with him all the way until they got to the last two seasons. So this was his master plan. This was what Matt Weiner wanted. They interviewed him after the finale aired. And, you know, typical TV creator speak when a show closes out, he didn't really give too many things away. You know, he kind of left it up to the, you know, to the eye of the beholder, if you will. But okay, we got to get back to the Brooklyn Nets. Talk about fading to black all of a sudden, the Brooklyn Nets. 38-44. I thought they were actually going to do worse than that. They were definitely on track to do that when their first year under Lionel Hollins. Darren Williams started out hot in the regular season. His knees went out again. He got hot again in the playoffs, and then he went cold again. Brook Lopez, he was hurt a little bit, but when he was healthy, he was great. They kind of had to make a really like scorched run at the end of the season in order to even get in the playoffs. And they did, but they did push the Atlanta Hawks to 6 games. What did you see out of the New Jersey Nets?
Well, they, in that,
I did it again.
In that hot period at the end, you know, you had what, 5 teams going for those final 2 spots. Mm-hmm. And Brooke, you know, nobody thought Brooklyn would have won. And, you know, the addition of Thaddeus Young for Garnett, you know, that put some life into him. And
was that a real win for Brooklyn?
It was a win-win, yeah, because I think didn't they get a first-round pick at him or something? They got something, like, in addition to him.
Yeah, they got something conditional. I don't remember what it was. It's not in this. It's not conditional to this year's draft, maybe for a later draft.
Yeah, but still, considering they have no draft picks for a while.
Yeah, get as many as you can.
Yeah, you got something for Garnett just for sentimental value. And, you know, Brook Lopez, when he's not injured, he's a top 5 center, usually. Mm-hmm. Problem is, he's always injured. But, you know, they put a good run at the end and scared Atlanta, which, you know, I don't think anybody really thought Atlanta was super strong as a number 1 going in.
Well, they had their, you know, we talked about this a million times. We'll talk about the Hawks a little later, but you know, they had their dissenters for sure. You know, even while they were on their winning streak and getting to a 60-win season, people still were not sure about Atlanta. But the fact that Brooklyn, it was weird because remember Atlanta did that to Indiana the year before, and then Brooklyn did it to Atlanta, you know, a losing team that kind of gives you a push. The problem was that the Nets never had a lead in the series and they didn't push them to 7 games. So it's kind of like, it's kind of like, oh, I guess you gave it a nice try. It wasn't like, oh yeah, you did a great job, you overachieved. It was more like, yeah, I guess that was okay.
You know? Well, it was basically, we could tell why you were a sub-500 team. Mm-hmm. You gave all you had. You, that veteran presence, you know, kicked in at the end. Like, okay, now we need to put it on. They turned it on, and then it was like, well, we still don't have enough because.
Can you give me a good comparison for Jared Jack? Because somebody, you know, Mr. Norman Rockwell, who's been a, you know, a special guest here on the NBA podcast before, and it's that Jared Jack is the kind of guy that loses you a bunch of games, but he wins that one really big game that you really, really needed, so you convince yourself that he's still valuable. Like, can you give me a good comparison? Not even NBA related.
Well, he's just that, you know, the Eddie House, Marcus Thornton. He's the one who's just going to, okay, we need you to take shots. We need you to try to take over it any way you can. You know, he's more of a point guard as opposed to the combo guard.
And he can shoot you out of a game.
That's the thing, is he'll win you one. It's like, holy crap, where'd you come from? And then you're like, come on, do it, do it, do it. Yeah. And then he'll lose five in a row. And you're like, oh, he sucks. And then come back.
What game was that in the series? Game five, huh? They lost the game, but he almost single-handedly got him back in it.
Well, yeah, that's the thing. You can shoot you in or it can shoot you out.
Mm-hmm. And then, go ahead.
Well, that's what I'm saying. That's what the backup, you know, that backup three-point shooter is supposed to do, that marksman. Mm-hmm. That's his job, is to get you in back in somehow.
Yeah, but he's more of like a spot shooter from the three-point line. He's not like Darren Williams, who tries to take you off the dribble and then take threes, which he's starting to lose that skill for sure. He's got some of the crossover skill at times. You can see it every now and then. It's like an old-time baseball player who's got like great hitting power. And that one moment he hits a big home run, but then he does nothing for like, you know, three or four games, and you're kind of like, what's his purpose here? You know, with Darren Williams, I just feel like it's kind of going down. The thing about Darren is that his game is so explosive and so blistering when it's good, when it's on, that you convince yourself that he can still do it. But if you look at the total body of work, his season this year, 12 points, 3 rebounds, 6 assists, 1 steal, just not very good, you know?
Well, the thing I learned this year from him, it's the injuries have really shut him down. Mm-hmm. It's not the, oh, he has no heart, he's past his prime. It's just, no. When he's on, he is still on. It's just, oh, the injuries just really debilitate him.
Is he the worst max contract in the NBA?
No.
Would you say Chris Bosh?
No, Bosh is better. It's just, you can't.
Andrea Bargnani was close to max. He was like at $16 million.
That's what I'm saying. There's people who are still closer, you know, who are those high, you know, even just dollar for dollar, Gerald Wallace. Who gets $10 million to sit and...
We'll get to him later.
No, but I'm saying, you know, with Bosh, it wasn't his fault he had heart problems. Mm-hmm. You know, Teletovich, can't blame him as well for, you know, having internal injuries.
Yeah, he actually had the same problem that Chris Bosh did. That was, yeah. The blood clot in his lungs, which shut him down for the season. There were rumors that he might come back, but it didn't service. Like, he practiced, but I don't think he actually played.
Well, it's one of those, like, you could come back, I could give you 10 minutes now, we best just...
They did get another good foreigner, though. I don't know if it's Pokeroff, I don't know if it's Billy King, but they got an eye for good, you know, on-the-market foreign players, and they found another good one in Bojan Bogdanovic from Serbia, I believe. Do you see a future there?
Yeah. Well, I was one of his big supporters, you know, beginning of the season. I was like, oh, he's going to overtake Kirilenko. Mm-hmm. Him and Teletovich, they're the future because they're just shooters. They're not... It's becoming more of a finesse game and, you know, stretch three, stretch four. Okay. Now the Euros are coming slowly back in because, oh, well, they're too soft. Okay. Now that you're not banging it anymore, here they come. And, you know, they're cheap talent as opposed to you're not going to sign $10 million deals.
It depends on their demand from their reputation. Like, I remember Nikola Mirotic got pretty nice money because he had built himself a pretty good reputation. I think, what was that? It was that in Serbia or Bosnia? I cannot remember where Mirotic is from.
He's from Bosnia, but he probably played for Barcelona.
Yeah.
They all play in the Spanish league.
And he got decent money, somewhere around like $6 million. I don't
but
know.
That's the highest for an import is $5 or $6 million. Mm-hmm. I'm saying to get, you know, that's the best, is $6 million. So you could get somebody decent for $4 million, as opposed to what's the $4 million U.S. market looking like?
Yeah.
And not too good.
The difference there for Bogdanovic is that he is on contract because he just signed. Mirza Teletovic is an unrestricted free agent. That's the only major unrestricted that Brooklyn has on tap in the summer. Their real intrigue is the player option, the opt-outs, or should we say opt-ins, because it includes Brook Lopez at $16 million, Thaddeus Young, who has a $9.7 million opt-out or opt-in, whatever he wants to do, and Alan Anderson at $1.3, which I would think he's going to opt out to try to find more money. Who do you see there coming back?
Alan Anderson, because he's going to get 1.3 anywhere. You know, what's the market going to be for him? Oh, we'll give you 1.8. You know, he's not
still much, better than 1.3.
He's not giving you much in demand, though. But he's going to get minutes here. He's not going to get minutes.
He's
elsewhere.
A good bulldog point guard. You know, he's kind of like Jared Jack. You know, he's a guy that comes in and he just delivers every now and then. But don't give him starters minutes. That's where you're really killing yourself with Allen Anderson.
Well, that's the thing is you're a backup point guard. Pretty much as we did with our preview, our rankings last year, there were like 20 decent point guards who are still like solid starters. Mm-hmm. And it's just like, well, you're not going to become a starter. And, you're just going to be a backup role. And you're the backup to the backup because now in comes in the hot rookies. Mm-hmm. Who everybody loves, and they're all fresh, and they're all going to be all superstars.
Joe Johnson's still there. He's going to be in the last year of his deal. I didn't think he had a terrible year this past season. It was definitely not as good as the 2014 season, where he seemed to just, under Jason Kidd, just come alive again, play like a max player. He didn't play like a max player this year, but he's not terrible. I would never, ever call him terrible.
Well, you can't blame him for his agent making that deal.
Mm-hmm. And off that trade that they had with Atlanta, Atlanta had the right to swap, and they swapped their number 15 pick. So they dropped to 29th in the first round. They also have a number 41 pick later on. What do the Brooklyn Nets need, whether through draft or through free agency?
All right, well, just to start from the backup of questions that I've been ignoring, probably Lopez will opt out, mm-hmm. because with the injury concerns, you probably want that long-term deal as opposed to that quick cash grab. Thaddeus Young, he might just opt out. I don't know. There'll be a market for him. Mm-hmm. He's still young enough. We've already, said Allen Anderson. What they really need right now is just they need backups and they need some size. Because mm-hmm. right now, Thaddeus Young is their four and he's more of a...
You've got Mason Plumlee, though, who's developing.
He's developing, but he's still like the backup to Lopez. Mm-hmm. He's the Lopez insurance, more or less.
So a power forward.
Yeah, they need a power forward. And also, with salary cap issues, is it such a bad thing to say, you're now picking 15 picks later in a shitty draft?
They're 23rd in points per game, the 24th in steals and blocks, the 26th, second in assists and rebounding. They're 19th in points allowed. They don't play that slow, but they just don't seem to go anywhere, and they're not really effective in one spot. It just seems like a thing where anybody that you can add to that mix would be good, particularly a player with a lot of youth, somebody in their early 20s, if you could find one of those.
Developmental?
Maybe. Like, if you could find a good one that you've been developing, they like you said, because of all the trades they had made with Boston and with Atlanta, they don't really have any draft picks. So, they had to buy a draft pick to get Markell Brown, who played well for them. They also got Corey Jefferson late in the last year's draft, and they played him a good bit. Lionel Hollins likes to play slow, and he likes to play through his bigs. So... A big being drafted is predictable.
So, okay, they need a four and a defensive three.
Yeah, I would agree with that. A wing guy that can at least provide some sort of a...
Because they got shooters. Joe Johnson is your shooter, so...
Yeah, and Toledovic and Bojan Bogdanovic are not defenders. They're shooters.
So. Yeah, they're just going to be stretches.
Mm-hmm. And so we're going to move away from the Brooklyn Nets. I got it right this time. And we're going to talk about your... Boston Celtics, who shockingly got to the playoffs in the eyes of some, including Adam Murray. They were at 40-42. They started out well with Rajon Rondo in tow. Then they made the Rondo trade with the Dallas Mavericks. Then they traded Jeff Green to the Memphis Grizzlies. But they were still able to stay afloat. Brad Stevens made a lot of really nice adjustments. And they got to the first round of the playoffs. They got eliminated in four games by the Cavaliers. More people remember what happened in game four with Love's injury and J.R. Smith backfisting Jay Crowder than they do with the actual games. But, you had to be impressed with Boston a little bit.
Yeah, that's the thing is, all I can say is that's just a definition of an overachieving team. Mm-hmm. The team had no stars. Their best guy is like, the third best option in any other team, so... They have the best bench in the league.
They almost have everybody back. The one main unrestricted free agents they have are, if you want to call them major, one is Brandon Bass, and the other is Jonas Jerebko. Do you see either of them coming back?
They want Jonas back, and Luigi is out. He's
Gigi D'Antoni, who's got a $2.2 million qualifying offer.
Yeah, so they want both those back. Mm-hmm. Luigi might not so much because there's a big case for your boy James Young to start doing something.
Jay Crowder will get paid. his qualifying offer is $118,000. I think he's going to take that. So,
no, he'll be around the mid-level. He'll be about $5 million.
Did he hurt himself with the knee injury?
No, because he didn't tear it.
Okay.
That was just a large sprain. You know, the offseason, he's resting it, and he's that energy guy that everybody wants. Just a, you know, a poor man's Kenneth Faried, if you will.
Between the four, Bass, Yarebko, Gigi, and Crowder, which one do you want back?
Jonas.
Okay.
Jonas provided the most energy I've seen.
Can he play power forward sometimes?
He's a stretch.
Okay.
But he's the energy stretch where you see him down there rebounding. You're like, what's he doing there? he shouldn't be there. And, you know.
Isaiah Thomas, getting him in that trade with the Phoenix Suns, that was huge. He almost immediately became their best player alongside Avery Bradley and Jared Sullinger.
Oh, he was the best player.
Oh, no doubt?
There's no doubt. Mm-hmm. Sullinger came back from his fat foot problem and, you know, was sort of slow, and that was it. It was just Isaiah's team, and,
yeah,
you know, that's essentially how they got in the playoffs.
And they had a couple other sneaky deals. One was, you know, getting Tyler Zeller for basically nothing from Cleveland, I believe. Signing Evan Turner late in the free agency process. Turner is very inconsistent, but he also had two or three triple-doubles. So you know, he does have the talent. Does he have number two pick overall talent? No, but he's a guy that can definitely give you something, you know, whether it be as a ball handler or as a small forward. And Zeller's field goal percentage was very high. He's a dependable scorer if you get him in a good position in the paint.
Well, yeah, that's the thing is with Turn, nobody wanted him. And is he good? No, but again, how is he getting a couple triple-doubles? He's just overachieving in that system. Zeller is like Brandon Wright, just only making smart shots. He is terrible. Like, I've seen him drop so many passes and kick so many balls out of bounds. Mm-hmm. He's just, you know, that clunky white guy, but, you know, he's like, oh, but he's 7 foot. He's going to make $2 million, whatever. But, you know, he takes smart shots. He's not going to, you know, he knows not to shoot.
They didn't come without their warts, though. They were 21st in field goal percentage. They were 28th in free throws. They were dead last in blocks. They were 24th in points allowed. They were actually, like, middle of the pack in rebounding, but you didn't like what you saw out of their interior, right?
They didn't have an interior. When you have Sullinger, who wants to shoot threes, you have a Linick, who is a stretch five, who your only rebounder is pretty much Evan Turner.
Yeah.
Their
leading rebounder was Sullinger at 8 rebounds a game.
And don't forget, he missed half the season and, you know, came back in 20 games and was horrible and did nothing and didn't rebound.
Who's the leader of this team? Is it yet to be determined in free agency?
The leader is Brad Stevens.
Okay.
No player has stepped up because they're all too new. Because, again, literally half the team wasn't here beginning of the season. Mm-hmm. So it'll be, you know, right now, technically it's Isaiah's team. Isaiah and Bradley, since they're best buds from back home, but
I'm gonna guess what you think they need is interior rebounding and shot blocking.
Well, that's what everybody says. Mm-hmm. I say what they need is a sneaky deal.
Explain.
I'm the only one who's saying this, but it makes total sense to me. But again, that's me. You have this Rajon Rondo $10 million trade exemption in first-round picks. Why not go to Indiana and be like, hey, I heard you don't like Roy Hibbert.
And he wants to opt back in.
You want to trade him for a first-round pick and this $10 million exemption? You know, David Lee, you're sitting on the bench there. You want to, you know, Golden State, you want to pay Draymond Green? Here's an exemption for it. Go get somebody, you know, it seems they have a talent, a knack.
Did you just pitch that David Lee come play for your team?
Is he a bad player?
He's not a good player.
Can he provide rebounding and offense that the Celtics do not have? Yes.
Yes. If you could separate the rebounding from defense, yes, he can provide rebounding.
Again, if you're trading, you know, here's a low first-round pick and a trade exemption for him, you got him for nothing. So why not make a sneaky deal? Get Hibbert for nothing. you know, hey, here's a number 15 pick.
Yeah, but that might be a Band-Aid. Like, he might be gone in a year, but maybe that's good enough for...
Well, then they have the cash that Ainge has been looking for.
And then, now, remember, though, they have 4 picks in this coming draft, 2 in the first, 2 in the second. One of those first they got in the Doc Rivers deal, so it's a very, very late pick from the Clippers. They have 4 first-round draft picks potentially in the 2016 draft, which is nuts.
Yeah, so again, why not try to get some other team's garbage? And then, oh, well, we'll resign if they're good, or, you know, bye-bye, we got your cash now.
Yeah, and we got these rookie contracts based on guys that, like, if I have 4 first-rounders, regardless of where they fall, if 2 of them wound up good, I won the draft.
Exactly. So that's what I'm saying. Why not try to get somebody else's malcontent?
Do you think things are going up, or do you think it was kind of fluky?
Well, things are going up, which is just, again, based upon the coach and you know, the fact the team has bought in.
You talked about, you know, whether they're going up and whether they're, you know, playing with house money. You don't think that's the case with Boston, I would believe, right?
No.
Okay, but you do think that's the case with the Milwaukee Bucks?
Because, you know, you said they're going to win 15 games. Mm-hmm. So it's like, well, what do they need? It's like, well, they're a year or two ahead of their proposed rebuilding. Because remember, 2 years ago, they were the 8th seed when they traded for J.J. Redick.
And that was a terrible trade because they traded away Tobias Harris.
Well, yeah, but I'm saying they tried. They tried and failed, but I'm saying they were just in the playoffs, and it was, okay, now it's rebuilding time. You know, now you're forgetting you're getting Parker back.
Oh, Jabari Parker from the knee injury after starting out.
Yeah, you're getting a lot of, I'm thinking Okafor. I'm like, no, it's not Okafor. getting Jabari Parker back, so what does this team need now? They just, you know, Jason Kidd just turned them into...
They were one of the youngest teams in the league. And they were the youngest playoff team, even younger than the Celtics, I believe. They were at 41-41, but they had a winning record for the majority of the regular season. It was only after they made a rush trade with Brandon Knight and then taking Michael Carter-Williams in his place where they had to kind of reteach Michael Carter-Williams.
When they went, like, I think 1-9 or 0-10.
They struggled big time. And then, like you said, they were without Parker. But they definitely had their shining moments for sure. John Henson had some really good games. He had one in the playoffs against the Bulls that was pretty spectacular. Giannis Antetokounmpo, I mean, you and I talk about him all the time, the Greek freak. He doesn't even know how to play basketball, and he's great.
And yet you watch him. It's like, well, you can see he's learning. You watch him learning in process.
I think he's going to be a 20-point-per-game scorer.
Oh, yeah. It's like you look at his – if somebody just went solely by stats – it was like, well, this kid's terrible. Why are we raving about a kid who averages like 10 points and like, you know, 6 rebounds?
He's a 6'10" small forward who averages 7 rebounds, 1 block, and shoots 50% from the field.
Yeah, and it's just like you just watch him. It's like, well, he's still learning, and like you know, I'm watching him in warmups. Mm-hmm. I'm like, well, he's doing drills and he's doing post-ups, and I'm like, everybody else is just sitting there, like, you know, warming up. He's like, you know, really wanting to learn. I'm like, damn, this kid's gonna be good.
Jason Kidd has a reputation as a coach lately for getting a lot out of the most unlikely of places. He got a great year out of Chris Middleton, the small forward from Texas A&M who bounced from Detroit. They basically got him in a dump deal. His numbers weren't great. You know, 13 points per game, 4 rebounds, 1.5 steals, 40% from the three-point line. But it was so much better than what people had expected. And he was sort of the go-to scorer for Milwaukee in the playoffs down the stretch of games. So what do you see for him as a restricted free agent?
He's going to have a big market because for some, you know, I'm – 1 week I'm up on him, the next week I'm down on him because – he hasn't been really consistent, but the only thing that sort of worries me is he got a year out of O.J. Mayo.
That's amazing.
Who last year was told to sit down because he was too fat. So the fact that you see O.J.
Mayo... Maybe when he sprouted the fro, it just made him look fat.
Yeah, I don't know, but the fact, like, you know, they're basically the same. They're kind of the same player, I'd say.
Close.
You know, they're similar in stature. They're not like...
Middleton's a shooter like him. You know, and I think he's had a couple of game winners this season, right? He had one off the glass, and then he had one against Miami, a total fluky game winner against Miami, you know. But he was a shot maker for Milwaukee, you know, and Jason Kidd put the ball in his hands and trusted him. He did the same thing with Michael Carter-Williams. At some point at the end of the season or in the playoffs, Jason Kidd put the ball in Michael Carter-Williams' hands and said, "It's your team." And he went out there and won them a game against the Chicago Bulls when they were facing elimination. Now, game six, they got destroyed, but that was because they didn't have enough, like, you know, they didn't have enough weaponry.
Well, yeah. But again, it's just the only, the thing about this team is, when I said they're playing with house money, was there was no superstar. Chris Middleton was the points leader. Mm-hmm. You know, what was he doing? Really nothing. You know.
They have a play, the only opt out they have is Jared Dudley at $4.25 million. I don't even think he's going to opt out of that one. Your free agents on the market are Nate Walters and Larry Sanders, who got released. So I don't even know if he's allowed to even sign with the team until his buyout is complete. Middleton is a restricted free agent, so we'll see.
Middleton will get a deal because once players start not exercising their options. Somebody like him will become more attractive and someone will overpay for him.
What's the biggest need there? Is it inside? Because even though they have a lot of taller guys and a lot of forwards, they were like 21st in rebounding, which is pretty bad. Do you see like a move where they try to move Pachulia?
Well, they sort of have like a log jam. Because you got Ilyasova, Pachulia.
Henson. But I would keep Henson.
Like, I don't know. They could use another big.
Remember, though, they have Damien Inglis from France who broke his foot. So he wasn't able to play the entire season. He's sort of like a really tall, small forward type.
You got Inglis. You got Johnny O'Brien from LSU who's just tall and has no position.
He barely played. I don't even remember seeing any D-League stats out of him. So he's still got a ways to go.
You know, so they have, that's what I said, like they seem to have every position, and you're not going to hit a home run at the 16th spot, so just take the best available.
They were 28th in turnovers. Do you think that might give them a reason to try to get another guard? I know they got Tyler Ennis in that Michael Carter-Williams deal too, but do you think they might need a guard who's a little more careful with the ball?
Well, half those turnovers you could attribute to Brandon Knight, who's gone, so.
Yeah, Michael Carter-Williams turns the ball over a bunch, too.
Oh, yeah, I know, but.
And sometimes they would have Antetokounmpo handle the ball, and that's a turnover. You're asking to turn the ball over there, too.
Yeah, but that's just everybody's turning it over. You can't have a defensive, a defensive point guard like a Grievous Vasquez come in and, you know, do something, but. Yeah, it's just take the best available. Don't go spending, don't try to get some garbage free agent, for $4 million.
Yeah, don't clip your wings as you will.
Yeah, don't be like, well, we need a backup point guard. What's Luke Ridenour doing these days? don't go looking for those type of backups. Just stick with your young core. Take the best available player and wait till the injuries start happening.
The next one is that now we're getting to the actual winning teams at Eastern Conference. It's crazy because we're 30 minutes into this show and we're finally getting to a winning team. The Washington Wizards. It's a little surprising to me that they're this early because we expected them to do a little better than this. But at 46-36, they didn't have a bad year. It was just that as they started in the regular season, you thought the season was going to be a lot better than that.
Well, as we sort of learned towards the end of the season, they realized this is all we need to do. Mm-hmm. We're not going to – why try to win 48 or 50 games? Let's just get where we're going to get. Well, we got the matchup we want to get. It's not
– And it's just that weird advantage of being a great road playoff team. I think they've lost, only two road playoff games in the last two seasons, even though they've lost at home like six or seven times, which is crazy.
Yeah, well,
it's almost like playoff positioning doesn't matter to them. It's like they're the East version of the Memphis Grizzlies. Memphis is like that.
Memphis is like that. The Celtics were like that too in the 2000s. Like, we don't care what seed we are.
Yeah, we can get it done. Yeah, yeah, but they were stars. I mean, those guys were Hall of Famers. They were able to get it done. Even with Doc freaking Rivers as their coach, they were still able to get it done. That was a different type of confidence. These are guys that, you know, I know Paul Pierce came in this season, but before that, you know, they didn't really have a lot of guys who won, you know, and they had to learn how to do it.
Yeah, and that's when I think Pierce came in and just said, look, guys, you could just give 90% for the season. He'll be good. Really? We could do that?
Their defense was great. 9th in points allowed, 3rd in field goal percentage defense. They were 10th in rebounding. That's helped by the fact that they had Marcin Gortat and Nene, who I do think had a really, really down year. They were 6th in assists because John Wall has really emerged into a great point guard.
Yeah, he is. He's in the top, the Mount Rushmore now, I believe.
Of the Kentucky players, where would you put, like, development-wise, is the best that's out of that Calipari class? Would you put Anthony Davis or John Wall?
Well, they're two separate players, plus Davis is still
growing.
Yeah.
Literally growing.
Yeah, you can't compare big to small.
Okay, then guards.
Guards, it would have to be him, who's, you know, Derrick Rose is Memphis, so.
Yeah, that's I forgot about Derrick Rose out there in Memphis.
You know, so it's by default it's the Kentucky guys. How many other, you know, the Kentucky?
Bledsoe, Brandon Knight.
Yeah, but those were always second tier guys. There was nobody.
You're calling Marcus Teague a second tier guy?
Marcus Teague. Well, now we're getting to third tier.
Their situation is interesting because they have a player option for Paul Pierce, but there's rumors that he's considering retirement. Do you think it's time for him to hang it up?
Well, there is. He's considering retirement. He's considering returning to L.A. No, I think he has one more year left in him.
You think it's one of those Tim Duncan things where regardless of how old he gets, he would literally have to be a bag of bones to not be able to provide for a team?
Well, like him, Duncan, Dirk, you know, they have that, like, okay, you could see, you know, the end is here, but, you know, like, let's just get one more good run in, one more good run in. You know, it's yeah, I see one more run.
The other one, everybody's pretty much on cap that I see that's major outside of Pierce. You got Wall's back. Nene is in the last year of his deal. Bradley Beal, I think, is going to be negotiating an extension this summer. I don't know if they're going to be completing the deal or they're going to have to negotiate it into next summer, but we'll see. Gortat's in the fold. Martell Webster's in the fold, even though Washington might not want him. Otto Porter Jr. played well, you know, and then Ramon Sessions was a decent deal. He helped them out when Wall broke his wrist in the Hawks series. And DeJuan Blair, who I guess is still on the team. And Chris Humphries, who I saw a couple of times in the playoffs.
Yeah, DeJuan Blair sort of fell off the map a lot. Mm-hmm. I don't know what happened to him.
So the unrestricted free agents, you got Kevin Serafin. You see him back?
No, because he didn't really do anything. Mm-hmm. He's going to, like, I got to see, like, because, you know, with these Euro players, they can always say, well, I'm just going to go back to Europe. Mm-hmm. You know, oh, why, you know, I don't like the deal. I'll just go get paid $1 million and go sit at home.
I think Seraphin's got just enough value to find somewhere else to go, whether someone's like Charlotte or someone like, you know, the Toronto Raptors. Like, I think he can find a place to play.
Yeah, but he's looking for starter time now. Which he's not really there.
No, he's not. Drew Gooden and Rasul Butler. Rasul Butler is like one of those like player rep type of people. He always finds a home. I don't know if he's going to stay in Washington. I mean, he's a good veteran leader. And then there's Drew Gooden, who's kind of in the same fold. You see them back?
No, wasn't Drew like a midseason pickup?
No. They re-signed him after his expiring deal had come up that he had originally signed with Milwaukee. So, you know, he's on very, very small money.
Oh, gotcha.
A lot of people have been talking about Drew Gooden as like a trivia question because they're talking about the 2007 Cavs team now that the Cavs are back in the finals. And they're like, oh, you remember Drew Gooden? That was your second best player. And I was like, no, that was like their fourth best player, you know.
Drew Gooden, the rat tail.
Yeah, with the like soul patch like thing on the back of his head.
Yeah, that was weird. Stupid.
I'm trying to remember. It was LeBron when he was. And that's the other thing. Well, you know, they had LeBron. It's like, yeah, but LeBron was young. Like, LeBron barely knew how to play in the playoffs at that point. He was great already, but he was still learning, man. I mean, I think they try to handicap the Cavs. Like, it was such a – what they do is they try to compare the Cavs this year to that Cavs team. It's like, no, not even close, you know?
Yeah, because he was just trying to, like, oh, I'm athletic. I could still bully over people, right? Nope.
Yeah. If 2007 LeBron played 2015 LeBron, 2015 LeBron wins every time. I'll put it that way.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, we're getting back on the Cavs again, but back to the Wizards. Actually, the Cavs were like, LeBron, when he was with the Cleveland Cavaliers, he used to torture the Wizards, absolutely torture them. Do you see that in their future? Do you see them making that move up into the top of the East sooner or later?
Well, it has to be sooner because Nene and Gortat are getting older. Drew Gooden will be gone. Chris Humphreys really took a major step back because he was productive in Boston. Mm-hmm. He was just one of those, like, look, go in, get some rebounds. You have a couple fouls. Go do it. And he did it. Now, all of a sudden, look, he's not even doing that much. Well, they need backup bigs, and they need a defensive three.
I don't see that defensive three because they have Otto Porter Jr., who I know he does have his moments where he doesn't play defense, just as Tony Snell. But I think what they need, Adam, is a stretch four. I think they need a big man who can shoot outside and try to woo the defenders away. They need some type of three-point shooting. When Trevor Ariza left, their three-point shooting got even worse than it was already. They're 26th in three-pointers made. They need that extra – that extra element to them in order to make them a real, like, viable finals contender.
But in order to have a stretch four, you'd have to sort of go to small ball, which this team can't even do that.
Mm-hmm.
They are built the old school traditional, you know, 80s basketball way, and I think all they could do is sort of keep embracing that.
So you're saying, like, kind of like a little bit what Memphis does. They're almost like the Brooklyn Nets, only a lot more talented. You know what I'm saying?
Yes.
You know, just a lot more talented version where the difference, though, is that the Nets weren't really good at anything. Like we said, the Wizards are a great defensive team, a really great defensive team. You know, they're able to hold people down regardless of whether it's West or East, you know. And then they got a great guarded Wall. Whether or not Beal will be overpaid, time will tell. I think he's worth his value at 15 or 17 million, if you ask me.
If they re-sign him this year on this year's numbers, mm-hmm. good deal. If they start getting into the 2016 cap, mm-hmm. It might not be the best deal anymore. So,
you're saying it's more of a risk against the new cap where they have more money?
Yes.
That's interesting. Now we're going to talk about the team that had a better record than them, but the Wizards, like, mercilessly swept them, and that was the Toronto Raptors. I don't know where to start with Toronto. They started out really hot, just like Washington. You know, everybody was looking at DeMar DeRozan and Kyle Lowry. Lowry had just re-signed with them, and it seemed like things were looking up for Toronto. Where did it all go wrong?
They peaked. They had their team, and then people figured them out, and they didn't make a trade. Every other team got a little better. They just sort of sat there, and everything happened sort of as expected.
Can you blame the coach, or is there a certain combination of players that you could really point the finger at and said, you didn't step up, or you didn't do what you were supposed to do?
I don't think you could blame the coach. Casey gave him as much as he possibly could.
Yeah, but I feel like it's almost a Mark Jackson type of theorem there where it feels like they've gone as far as they possibly could with Casey.
Yeah, I think that's they've gone as far as they can with him. But I think if I'm ownership, I'm like, there's so many teams that changed coaches this year. Might as well wait another year where there might be a little less. Because everybody pretty much has new coaches now.
Yeah.
So everyone, you know, you could – you're not going to be like, well, let's get the retread from every, you know, who's been in the league for 30 years and been on 20 teams.
Well, there's also politics involved, too, because Masai Ujiri, who came from Denver, that was – Dwayne Casey was not his hire. That was Colangelo's hire. So you got to think sooner or later he's going to, you know, drop the axe and he's going to want to make his move.
Well, you're thinking – so the problem is, you know, as much fanfare as he had coming in –
what's he done?
He's okay. Well, you got rid of Bargnani. How? Amazing. You got rid of Calderon. How? And amazing. But then you kept Amir Johnson and Patrick Patterson. And
you had valuable draft picks, and you drafted Bruno Caboclo.
No, you can't go. You know, you need to try once in a while to take that.
That was beyond a reach. That was beyond a reach. That was almost like Sid Finch type of reach. Like almost drafting a fake player.
It was a reach, but you can't fault somebody for, you know, trying, I guess.
You're trying to defend Bruno Caboclo. I can see it.
Well, cause I don't know. You don't know what he is.
He got Lou Williams in a nothing trade involving Atlanta, and he wound up being the sixth man of the year. He did quite a lot.
But then again, if your big problem is having size and muscle, you did nothing to address that.
They have no restricted free agents, no team options, no player options. It's all in unrestricted. And I don't care about Landry Fields, Chuck Hayes, or Tyler Hansbrough, with all due respect to those players. It's really about two guys. Lou Williams, who we just talked about winning Sixth Man of the Year, had probably his best year as a pro. And Amir Johnson, who's kind of like a stocky forward who shoots high percentage because all he does is take kind of close range shots. What do you see there? You see both of them back, or none of them, or one of them?
I think Lou Williams, somebody's going to overpay him. That's what always happens to the six men.
So, do you think one of their biggest needs in the offseason is guard depth?
Oh, they have a ton of needs. That's the problem. Mm-hmm. You have guard depth. You need a starting power forward.
You really need a rim protector. They were really bad in block shots.
You need a... They need a big three. Because mm-hmm. who's Terrence Ross isn't a. They need somebody with size. Mm-hmm. And
Terrence Ross, is he good? Is he just that guy that had a 50-point game one day?
I think he's just that guy, and you know, DeRozan is pretty much the same player. So you're playing two similar guys.
The intrigue with DeRozan is that he has a $9 million opt-out in 2016. He is definitely opting out of that. So this is really his free agent season coming up.
Oh, he's opting out, but, you know, I think both teams will pay. Mm-hmm. I think he likes Toronto. Toronto likes him.
What did they do right, though? Like, their offense is pretty good. I know the crazy part about Toronto is you'd think that with their defense being so bad that they play fast, but they don't. They actually play pretty slow under Casey.
They're just efficient. You know, with the exception of the playoff collapse. Mm-hmm. You know, Lowry, he was good this season.
Yeah, but he fell apart in the playoffs, like you said. I mean, again, he was so bad against John Wall.
We're not talking the playoffs where that entire Toronto team collapsed. DeRozan was great before his injury early in the season. You know, Valanciunas, he's only a second-year player, so he's learning. He's learning not to be soft.
Yeah, but actually it's his third that just passed. But it just seemed like he seemed to be going somewhere after year two. And then we saw him in the FIBA World Cup, and we thought, okay, now he's really starting to pick it up, you know, when he played for Lithuania. And he just was kind of the same player, you know? He didn't really go up from what he was in the postseason when they played the Nets. You know, it just seemed like he was the same player, and that was the disappointing part. You want to see younger players like that grow together, and Valanciunas didn't grow.
But he didn't. I don't think he took a step back either.
He didn't take a step back. I'll agree there. You know, Terrence Ross took a step back. You know, it seemed like he was going somewhere, and then back to the saddle. You know.
Yeah, but I don't know what they need. They just need. I don't know. Maybe they just sort of need veteran leadership.
Mm-hmm. I agree there. You know, they said that. They said we need a guy like Paul Pierce. When the Wizards eliminated him. You know, but what do you? I mean, we're not gonna do. We'll do free agency another day. But maybe a guy like a Kevin Garnett, or like a Thaddeus Young, like somebody like that could be helpful for them. You know.
Mm-hmm. Thaddeus Young will be a great signing for them because it sort of speeds them up a little bit.
That could. Let's move on to. Now we're getting into the main contenders. Like, you and I have kind of agreed that we were very, very skittish about the prospects of Toronto, Washington, Milwaukee, or Brooklyn, you know, or Boston getting to the finals. We kind of said, not a chance. This one we definitely thought had a chance. And that was the Chicago Bulls, who all of a sudden, after having a lot of hope going into the season and then having a lot of hope during the Cleveland series, all of a sudden got wiped away really fast. And now it feels like we're kind of starting over again.
Well, really are, especially the dirty way they did Thibodeau.
What did you think about that process with Gar Foreman and John Paxson with the way they treated Thibodeau? They waiting until all the coaching vacancies were filled and then letting him go.
That was just dirty. And then, like, you could, you know, if you're going to let him go, let him go. Don't be like, oh, we're going to try to get a pick. And it's like, well, you didn't really try. And then all you did is just talk bad about him the entire time. Mm-hmm. Just be like, look, we're going a separate way. Thank you. Goodbye. You don't need the extra commentary or the...
Yeah, the press release was almost like a self-criticism type of very overt type of like statement. It was like, okay, we get the point. You're firing him, you know? But it was almost like they were kicking him in the ass on the way out.
Yeah, there was no need for them to do that.
And let's be serious. Without Tom Thibodeau, what would Jimmy Butler be? You know? What would Taj Gibson be? I mean, what would Joakim Noah be? They would be bench guys on another team.
Yeah, the problem with Thibodeau is he was just wound too tight and, you know, he wore everybody out before the playoffs and they just had nothing left.
So they went offense this time. Predictably, we had heard about this for like a year, I believe, and that's Fred Hoiberg, who was the head coach at Iowa State, which is where his alma mater was. He was a three-point specialist, played with the Bulls underneath Tim Floyd. I've watched his sets in college. He loves the three ball. He loves motion. So we're going to see it. We're going to try. He's going to try to work his the Hilton magic that he had in Iowa State. He's going to try to bring it over there in Chicago.
Yeah, good luck.
And try to work on the three-point shooting.
Now, not to say he has a tough job, but how are you going to do that with Mitch Roddick, Noah, and Gasol, who are slow as fuck?
What about Doug McDermott and Tony Snell?
Well, I'm still waiting for your boy McDermott to show up.
Yeah, he took a year off. Arena, yeah. Tony Snell played okay. You know, he was kind of like Jimmy Butler at first. He had a reputation as a defensive guard, and then he started to shoot better from the three-point line to the point that he became a little bit of a threat. But they weren't the problem with Chicago's offense. On the offensive side of the ball for Chicago is that really none of their players outside of Butler were consistent enough to like pose a threat to the really good teams when they played against them. And Cleveland exposed that badly. They would just leave those guys open. They couldn't make shots.
Well, their problem was, you know, you had Jimmy Butler, but who else did you have? You had, all right, all season, do you have Derrick Rose this week? I don't know. We might have him.
Derrick Rose is the definition of inconsistent.
You know, who was the starting three? Before Dunleavy came back midseason, it was just like, well, we'll put a body there. Mm-hmm. There was no, you know, you need somebody opposite Jimmy Butler. And, okay, so are you going to have a defensive guy? No, we have Mike Dunleavy.
What's the future for Derrick Rose here? He still has 2 years left on his deal, but he does have value because of his playoff performance. Do you think they have the balls to really go out there and look for a suitor?
I don't think they're going to go look for one, but if somebody called them, and they'll think about it. There's a difference between...
Like what if Dallas called and said, you know, we'll take Derrick Rose in exchange for Dirk Nowitzki and Monte Ellis.
You know, Chicago would listen to that offer, but Chicago's not going to go, hey, Sacramento, we got this player, Derrick Rose. What you think about him? He looks pretty cool, huh? He looked pretty cool in a kid's
shirt. Of him?
Yeah, you know, they're not going to go out and shop him, but I think if somebody was like, you know what, we're looking to make a splash, we'll give you a first for him and, you know, somebody else. Like, you know what, we could get out of his contract and we don't really know... You know, because he's no longer a young kid anymore.
How much does Jimmy Butler get paid?
You're going to have to max him out.
18 to 19? That's about it. Pretty close.
Yeah, whatever it comes to.
As a restricted, yeah, every contract goes up to about 17 if you want to max him out.
You know, because somebody's going to go in and be like, well, if you're not going to max them out, well, then we're going to.
Kirk Heinrich has $2.87 million on an opt-in. I think he's going to use it. Your unrestricted free agents are Aaron Brooks, Nazi Muhammad, Mike Dunleavy Jr. Because of Hoiberg with the three-point shooting, I could see him giving a low-ball deal to Dunleavy Jr. and see if he takes the deal, even at his age, where he's kind of rotting there. And
just a veteran minimum, be like, look.
Yeah, Aaron Brooks, whatever. You know, I mean, if he stays, he stays. If he goes, he goes. I mean, he's played in China. He's played for like five different NBA teams.
So there you go. Aaron Brooks, a.k.a. Allen Anderson. What do you know? They're just backup point guards who are just going to bounce around. You're not going to find tons of money for them.
Yeah, the problem, though, is that Anderson kind of – he stepped in the playoffs and did well. Aaron Brooks did not. Like, I felt like when Derrick Rose had to sit or needed rest or if he wasn't feeling it, when Brooks came in, he would just suck the life out of the court. And they just – it was so bad that Matthew Dellavedova was out playing him. That's how bad it got.
Yeah, but, you know, Brooks was also – he was efficient when he was in Houston.
He was. He was the most improved player, I think, one year.
So, you know, Brooks just – he's a little past his prime now, so –
Mm-hmm. What's their biggest need? They've got a bunch. I think their bench play was inconsistent. Their field goal percentage was bad. Their guards don't steal the ball, even though they have Rose and Jimmy Butler, two of the most athletic guards in the league. They might lose Dunleavy, so they don't really have a small forward. I don't think there's a future there for Joakim Noah, who's going into the last year of his deal. Hoiberg loves two guards, so you would think that he's going to go try to find one either in the draft or free agency. Like, but what's their biggest need?
Their biggest need is a three guard. Because, you love two guards. Well, what are you going to do with Jimmy Butler?
Yeah.
He's not a point. He's not a three. So you already have your guy there. So you either have to go a little smaller and get rid of Noah move Gasol to center.
You think Noah's year was kind of a fluke and then he can bounce back from it? Or do you think this is it for him?
I wouldn't say it's a fluke. It's just, you know, you're slowly at the downside now.
Like, he's still high in assists as a center, but his rebounding and his block shots went way down. His defensive presence was down.
Okay, he's high in assists as a center. Go move him to New York because we can play the triangle.
You know, that would actually work. Pulled off a trade and say, like, they traded Tim Hardaway Jr. for Joakim Noah. Like, I think that could actually work.
He's the type of player New York could use, and bam, they're, you know, instantly better.
Because they're not getting a big man in the draft, but that's for another episode. We're going to get to that pretty soon. Do you see them as an NBA Finals team in a year or two? Do you think Fred Hoiberg can do what Steve Kerr did?
No, I'm not that high on Hoiberg, because he took, what, a decent Iowa State program and kept him decent? Did he really transcend that program? I don't think so.
I think what he did to Iowa State is that he took a program that was doing absolutely nothing and turned them into a threat in the Big 12 and in the nation. And they were also the most efficient offense in the country for three or four seasons. So those are the two big things he had. The only thing that I think was really nagging at him is that – and I think this nagged at Jabari Parker before he left after Duke lost to Mercer. I think that loss to UAB in the first round was really nagging at him. He didn't want to go out like that. But when an offer like this comes, you can't turn it down, I guess.
Oh, yeah. There's only 30 NBA jobs. You got to do that.
But does it hurt when you know that you could have done more with the team and you let him down? Or you have to have an even keel as a businessman and say, you know, I have to kind of take the amateur career and throw it away, and I need to move on.
Yeah, all you could do is be like, okay, throw away my high school scouting reports, and, you know, now it's time to go do NBA stuff again. Because you can't be, oh, well, we lost, so I need to come back, because you don't know when the next offer will come.
But he's not Calipari or Pitino who failed. He's not like a yeller and a screamer. He's very, very toned down. Like we already said, he played in the NBA. He was actually one of the president of basketball operations for the Minnesota Timberwolves when right after the Garnett deal, when they had like Kevin Love and Al Jefferson and things didn't seem to be going anywhere. He was like – so he has a little bit of management experience. I don't know what kind of experience that is.
Well, but I'll put it this way. Right now, Chicago seems to have an identity problem. He has every opportunity to stamp out what type of team he wants.
Yeah.
So are they going to be a playoff team? Well, it depends upon these decisions he makes this year.
Well, the Warriors didn't really make big moves, you know, after they fired Jackson and then they took off, you know. But, you know, they had some ready-made players there, you know, and we kind of knew that. With Chicago, they probably have already peaked.
You know? Well, with the Warriors, is Kerr really that much different of a coach? On offense, you have two, you know, your team is all set. You're not bringing a...
I think their coaching staff was better, and I think they had better team unity.
That's unity, but I'm saying player... I can't think of the word, but...
Player-coach relationship?
Not player-coach, players on the court. You know, the pieces you have.
Oh,
the talent you have to work with.
They weren't very different at all. They did bring in Sean Livingston, who gave him a little bit of value at the...
Yeah, but that's at the bench. But I'm saying, you're bringing in Hoiberg, who you said likes the threes. You have a team that's not built for that right now.
That is true.
So I'm saying, that's why I've said, you might have a little identity crisis, because what are you going to do? Your coach wants to do this. Your team can't do that. Are we going to have a Denver situation where you're just going to try to be like, I'm going to force you guys to do this?
Square
why are
peg,
you guys-
round hole?
Yes.
Yeah, so you think you're going to see a lot of changes.
I think there's, you got to have some.
Some you got to say changes.
Changes.
Oh, David Bowie. Did you know that was a David Bowie song?
You mean it wasn't a Tupac song?
Moving on. We're not going to be talking about the... I actually like the Tupac one better. I know I'm going to get killed for saying that, but yeah, I did. That was like... It was like a good 2 years after he was killed that came out.
He's still releasing albums now.
Oh, Tupac's still alive, huh? And what about Biggie?
I haven't heard anything from him. The mixtapes have gone silent.
What about Elvis?
Isn't he like 120 now?
Like
he's like, oh, it's Elvis' birthday.
He died 1977. I think he was in his 40s. So in that regard, he'd probably be in his like late 70s or maybe like 80 years old.
So who would want to celebrate an 80-year-old Elvis? Be all broken down? Like, just...
Well, you know. Think about it this way. What if you know, Notorious B.I.G., if he wasn't shot dead, he would have died of a heart attack. I'm not sure about Tupac. I think Tupac would become an actor. I really do. I think he would have done what 50 Cent did, or what Jamie Foxx did. Even though Jamie Foxx wasn't a singer like per se, he was a comedian who sang at times. But he became a serious actor. I think Tupac had that extra thing to him. I don't know if you're a rap enthusiast. I'm not either. But just from watching him, I think Tupac could have been a great actor.
Well, he already had Menace to Society, and
oh yeah, you're right. And Above the Rim, right?
Was he Above the Rim? But he already had acting skills underneath, and it was just, you know, he had it. Just, you know, Biggie was just going to rap till he, you know.
Till the day he died, yeah.
Until he had a heart attack.
Yeah, he was so big too, man. I mean, Justin Rosero loves Biggie. Yeah, I think anybody wants to read it, there was a nice piece he wrote about the, you know, how the death of Notorious B.I.G. kind of put an effect on Justin, you know, Mr. Rosero, who writes for the placetobenation.com. Really, really nice piece. I think you'll enjoy that. But moving on, I don't know how to make a corollary between, you know, Tupac and Biggie and the Atlanta Hawks, but I'm sure there is somewhere.
Hotlanta.
Yeah, but that's a whole different thing. That's like Lil Jon and Ludacris.
Lil Jon, Outkast.
Ludacris.
Ludacris.
That's the Usher song. Remember, what's the name of the song? Say Yeah? Something like, oh, it was Yeah. It was just called Yeah.
Okay, well, you could be the Usher. Usher aficionado.
Well, doesn't he have, like, minority ownership in the Cleveland Cavaliers, or did he sell that?
I have no idea.
Now we're totally lost. Speaking of the Cleveland Cavaliers, they eliminated the Atlanta Hawks in 4 games. I don't think people expected the Hawks to get swept. I didn't, but you did.
Yeah, just, you know, even like once you see Brooklyn gave you a tough time, then Washington gives you a tough time.
You can make the case Washington should have eliminated them.
Oh, yeah, definitely.
If John Wall doesn't break his wrist, they might win that series.
No, if Wall didn't break his wrist, if Pierce had shot that with like a couple seconds less and mm-hmm. you didn't have that layup by
Horford.
Horford, yes. You know, that's it's a Washington series. Bam.
I don't want to keep talking about what went wrong for some of these teams. What went right for Atlanta? Why did it all go so well for them at a 60-22 season?
Because as a team, they all shot threes. As a team, they all kept passing until you found the open guy to shoot a three.
What was the most effective part of their offense? Was it the team play? Was it the fact that everybody seemed to have their best years between Millsap, Teague, Horford, Korver, and Damari Carroll? What was the main reason why?
It was the team play. Mm-hmm. And everyone sort of was like, okay, this is what we know we need to do. This is what we know we're all going to be doing is shooting threes. We have our role. You know, Millsap could sort of be that one roving guy. Mm-hmm. But everybody else, okay, let's just keep passing until we shoot threes.
Horford, you talked about with the putback. They had four All-Stars on this team, Korver, Teague, Millsap, Horford. Damari Carroll was the one that didn't make the All-Star game, but he had his best season yet. He's an unrestricted free agent alongside Paul Millsap. That's a really tough decision to make because if you pay both of them, you might be able to get them on low value going into the new salary cap since their contract is up this year instead of next year. Do you see Atlanta biting, with a new owner, biting the bullet cap-wise, trying to sign both of them at about 11 to 16 million, whatever they get on the market, and then just trying to keep that starting five intact?
No, because I don't think either will take bargains to stay there.
But that's not a bargain. Like in today's cap, that's actually a good deal. In next cap, that might be a bargain.
Well, next up, I'm saying there'll be other teams who'll pay more than that.
Are you sure?
For Carroll, in this weird NBA world where 3-and-D is more valuable than ever before, and you know you want to people saying you should max out Draymond Green. Mm-hmm. Damari Carroll is easily, you know, $12, $13 million player right there.
I still remember him as like a puppy dog with the Memphis Grizzlies.
Yeah, remember he was Memphis? He was getting injured, then he went out to Denver?
Yep, you're right.
I got injured to nothing? Mm-hmm. And it's just like, oh, he's another flunky.
Yeah.
And then all of a sudden, oh, I'm just going to be, you know, find my game.
Yeah. Horford's back, even though he's in the last year of his deal. Korver's signed through. Teague the same. Dennis Schroeder and Mike Scott are really nice players, but they're not great. Also, Tabo Cephalosha's unfortunate nightclub incident really hurt him because it stripped him of a 3-and-D guy on that team.
Well, yeah, because, you know, Korver's not going to play D.
Their best individual defender was Cephalosha.
Yeah, and then once sort of he went down, the team, you know, you lost a big hole in the bench. Mm-hmm. You know, you had nobody to go to because, you know, Schroeder, okay, he's learning. He's you have a Teague who was playing hero ball. That was horrible.
You didn't like when he was trying to do a LeBron in game three?
There was just no need for that. And like he was the only like you watched the bench.
It's either him or Kent Bazemore, man.
Like you watched the crowd. The crowd's like, we know you're not making it. Like why?
Well, the layup was weird. I thought he had it, and he faked like he was fouled, and he just he laid it up, but he smacked it so hard it like didn't even come close to the rim. You know, like when Curry got blocked by Kyrie in game one of the finals, like that was just a really great defensive play. Teague's was just like, what was that? You know, yeah. Maybe he's just not built that way as like a go-to guy. And that's what the Hawks proved, that they need a go-to guy. But if you sign Millsap back, if you sign Carroll back and you have all five of these guys in tow, you're never going to have a go-to guy, Adam. Unless you just change the philosophy of the team under Mike Budenholzer.
Then you need that non-stretch four. You need that traditional power forward, and you need that, you know.
I think you hit it on the head. I think they need rebounding in the absolute worst way. They were 28th in rebounding.
You need a rebounder. Here's this. Call me crazy. Get a slasher. Mm-hmm. Get a backup. All he does is just slash. That's it. Oh, yeah, everybody's expected three, you know, get the change of pace the other way.
But should they have to change anything when you're a 60-win team, even though you got swept so badly by Cleveland, a superstar-laden team in the finals? Like, do you really need to change many things?
You don't need to change many things, but if you've been exposed, you've been exposed. Mm-hmm. And, you know, and like I said, the problem with Memphis was they had no second gear, couldn't get out of their own way because they couldn't speed up. You can't come back if you're a three-point shooting team by trying to shoot more three-pointers. Like that game four, they were like 5 for 30 or something.
Yeah, but their defense was good, but the problem was they didn't seem to be able to slow down Cleveland when they needed to.
But yeah, this, but you can't just be like, well, we can try to shoot our way back into it. No, that's just, let's dig deeper. We'll get out by digging, you know. No, try something different. They didn't know how to do it.
That's why they call it Plan B, because it's different from Plan A. Exactly. Plan B and Plan A can't be the same thing.
Which is all they had was, well, shooting three doesn't work? Okay, how about we go for the long ball? Yeah.
How about corner threes? It's like, no, that's a three-pointer. You know, you have to pound it inside. You have to try to get to the free throw line some. It seemed like they were a little bit too predicated on the spread. I agree with you there.
One-dimensional.
Yeah, maybe letting Peronich go as an unrestricted free agent isn't the worst idea. It would let you get a big that can help you inside with pounding.
Well, the thing is, you're going to pay him, who's 32 now or something, or you're going to pay another guy who's 30, and they'll do the exact same thing for the same amount of money.
And that's gonna wrap up the Eastern Conference. But you know, actually, we've gone pretty long here. Are you ready to kind of like bring over part two for the Western Conference? Are you game for that?
Yeah, let's split this one up.
Alrighty. So we're gonna actually go ahead and continue this one for part two. This one's gonna end part one of this version. So please tune in for part two of our Gone Fishing playoff previews.